Hey guys, this is A to Z Podcast. I'm Austin.
And I'm Zach.
We got another podcast for you guys. This week it's movies and TV shows. We got quite a lot of stuff to cover. We're going to try to, you know, really power through it all, keep you guys entertained, don't want to bore you guys. First up, real quick, just want to tell you how to find us like usual. You can go to iTunes, just type A, the number 2Z. In the search bar, you hit enter, you scroll down to the podcast section, and we're right there. You click on it, you download us, and boom, you're done.
Yeah, make sure you subscribe.
A lot of you guys.
Make sure you subscribe.
Yeah,
so
yeah, for sure.
Every week, you don't even have to remember that each week. Then when you subscribe, all of a sudden, you'll get a little push notification saying, hey, new A to Z podcast is ready for you. Give it a listen.
Yeah, you'll be good. I know a lot of you guys find us, too, at our website, and that is A, the number 2Z, podcast, spokane.podomatic.com. Spokane is spelled S-P-O-K-A-N-E. You just go there, and you can listen to our podcast without actually downloading it, too. So just in the background, if you're sitting at home on your computer or something like that, you can do that, too. It's pretty simple. We appreciate it. Also, our email, if you want to contact us or let us know anything, that's a2zpodcast@gmail.com. That's the number 2. But anyways, it's the movie podcast. While I was down in Portland,
we watched like 400
million. We watched a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we had a lot of downtime.
We were really chucking through them.
In between, if you listened last week, you knew that we built the ultimate gaming PC for me, and I have been enjoying it thoroughly. And while we did that, we had a lot of downtime in between loading for updates and everything like that. So we threw a ton of movies on there. Well, we'll get right into it. I guess the first one that we saw that was one of, personally, my favorite movies of last year, although it's really touches on some really tough subject matter, was Zero Dark Thirty. You finally got around to seeing it.
Yeah. And it was phenomenal. I highly recommend watching it. You know, especially if you, like a lot of people in our country, have a connection to the war a little bit, it's definitely worth watching. I mean, it's cringeworthy at some parts, and not only just the torture scenes, but how long it took us to act on the information that was on hand. You know, just it kind of shows a little bit of the issue with how our government functions and everything like that.
It's really,
there's a
really
certain
well.
Guy that I know who had a friend that did stuff for the military that passed away, you know, and I told him definitely check this out because a lot of it sort of pertains to what his friend who passed away did. And I think it fairly accurately describes what happened. I mean, now obviously everything is Hollywoodized.
Yeah, it is a movie. So, okay, everybody's really pretty good looking in it, you know. And that's not how the real world works, but it's okay. I mean, a lot of people say, well, that's not how it really happened, or dispute minor facts. And okay, yeah, it is a movie, but I think that the majority of it is exactly how it happened, because the director, Kathleen Bigelow, has nothing. This is like her second war movie that she won Best Picture for The Hurt Locker, and this one she was nominated, but I think because it touches on such taboo subjects like the torture scenes, still I will think about them every once in a while, and they're really, really intense, you know? It's just like a really good movie that if you don't have the stomach for it, like, I can understand, but I think this is like something that people will look back on and be like, you know, that is a great representation of the exact time, and for how much jumping around it does, it has a really straight line narrative to it too, which I found was one of the most impressive things, because literally, like, it jumps ahead 2 or 3 years and you're like, well, what's happening? And you can understand and follow it logically. And it's just a really, really great
I mean,
movie.
There's a reason why when this movie was coming out and stuff, the government kind of got pissed at it, because it is sort of so true to what actually happened. So the government's like, nah, this movie isn't right. This is totally false. We didn't ever torture anybody. What are you talking about?
Like,
you know, it's
without trying to spoil anything, there's a scene where, I mean, he's not a bad person, but we bribe them with a Lamborghini, and you know that happened without a doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that happened.
Well, but we didn't buy some foreign man a $400,000 Lamborghini? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's but that's how things work, and It's just like, I think, you know, in future time when people look back, like I just said, it's going to be a representation of how the 2000s were in a post 9/11 society. I mean, even the opening scene is phone calls from 9/11, and it just sets the mood right off the bat. Now, one problem that we did have is that we watched it in my apartment in the middle of the day, and the end scene or the last act of the movie is
the assault on the compound.
The assault on the compound, which everybody knows how that ends, but I mean, it's all at night, so some of the helicopter scenes lose the effect. Like, I mean, it was really amazing to see it in the big screen when the lights are all off, and I kind of regret that now that we watched it in the middle of the day, but we had to squeeze it in, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So we highly recommend it. I think if you could sit through and watch Django, then you'll have no problem with this movie. I think Django is even more brutal with some of the Mandingo scenes and stuff like that. Yeah,
Django is like a different type of violent. Like, it's like over the top violence, and this is like, this is really happening violence kind of thing.
Yeah, this is more real. But you know, if you can handle Django, then you can handle this movie. I just don't want anybody to kind of think, oh well, maybe I don't want to see this movie, because I mean, the torture, while it's real and it happens in that movie, it's not overly bad either. Yeah. I mean, it's tough.
It will make you question things too, which I think most great movies do. Like, is torture okay if it works? And those are questions that you'll have to figure out on your own. I'm not going to answer them for you, but it's definitely worth checking out, just because of, it's going to make you think. The scenes are shot so well that it's going to stick with you. And I think, you kind of lived in the Middle East. Is that like an accurate depiction of how things are?
Sort of. I mean, where I lived in the Middle East, you know, is definitely more pro-American than almost any other place in the Middle East. You know, it's about as pro-American as the Middle East can get, or pro-Western culture. So, I mean, the scenery and stuff absolutely was accurate, you know, and but I never had to deal with anything close to kind of what this movie was touching on, so I really can't speak to it. But you know, living there, yeah, I could see how the movie, you know, took place there and stuff like that. You know, they did a good job in that respect.
Yeah, but overall, I highly recommend this movie. One of the top movies I saw last year, without a doubt.
Yeah, so comes with the Zach and Austin recommendation.
Yeah.
Another great movie that we got to watch while we were down there that, you know, you kept banging the drum for. I just don't go out all that often. I'm more of a stay-at-home saver type. But anyways, was Looper. It was amazing, I thought, too. I mean, you probably get tired of hearing us say that, because pretty much anything we talk about seems to be amazing. But it really was. I mean, it's on a different level from Zero Dark Thirty, because they're, you know, way different subjects. You know, this is all fiction versus Zero Dark Thirty, which is fact.
It's a science fiction movie, and it's time travel, and it's really deep, but also at the same time, just like, it's a really, really, really smart, dumb action movie, you know? Like, you can tell it was obviously really well written. And, I mean, the time travel, the acting in it, same with Zero Dark Thirty. The acting in Looper, that little kid that he had that's in this movie, is like, he's an amazing actor for how old he is, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, it has Bruce Willis, who, to me, is a decent actor. He's not the best, you know, but he's definitely passable in this movie.
Yeah,
but,
exactly. I think he mails it in a lot of times, but then you watch something like Pulp Fiction, or you watch this, and it's like, you know, he is a pretty good actor. But I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in this, and he plays a young Bruce Willis, and one of my favorite scenes in this movie is the scene where it kind of has him live out his life, and you see him become like a drug addict and robbing people, and his redemption. And I think that is just like one of the best scenes. It's a really, really great scene, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like Zach said, the whole premise of this movie is that time travel is invented, and the world's kind of run by this huge gang organization, and they have people in the past that they send the future people to be killed, and then when you're done being of use to the gang, they send you yourself back in time, but you don't know it, and then you kill them, and when you open up their jacket, you find a bunch of metal, like silver, and that's your payment. And so you know that your loop was closed, as they called it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds a little iffy, but
I think,
it's really well described and really well done in this movie.
The way that the movie describes it is, like, so perfect that I had no problems following along and understanding, like, wow, that makes a really lot of sense, you know? And it's really well acted. And did you have a problem? Okay, because every time travel movie has the time travel paradox, which it's just like, well, is this the first time that it's happening, or is this, like, the multiple time happening? And I think that this movie is, because I've talked to some people that don't like it because of the time travel paradox, and I had no problem with it. I can see through past that and really just enjoy it for what it is, which is a really, really smart action movie, you know? Like, to me, this was my favorite movie of the year of 2012 because it's the movie I will watch the most, you know? Like, Zero Dark Thirty, I will concede that Zero Dark Thirty is a better movie, but I don't know how many times I'm going to watch Zero Dark Thirty, you know?
Sure, and that's the problem with time travel movies, is no matter how well you do it, somebody's always going to find something to pick apart, because that's just how it is with time travel. You always can find something to pick apart. But I agree in the sense that, you know, is this the first time that this has happened, you know? And for me, I think that makes the most sense, you know, is that this is the first time that it's happened in the time cycle.
Yeah.
And he's ending it, you know, or finishes it, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. If you saw the movie, you'd understand what we're talking about. So,
yeah, it's just, highly recommend it. But moving on to a dumb action movie. You were down here. Now, you live in Spokane, and I live in Vancouver, the Portland area, you know. And one thing that we have that Spokane doesn't is this wonderful thing called Cinetopia. And there are other theaters around the nation that are like this, but it is, they call it, like, first-class movies, or I guess that's kind of what it is. It's basically, you go to a movie, you sit in the most comfortable leather lazy boys, you get food service brought to you, you can drink adult beverages if you want to. I mean, you pay a little bit more, but we went in the middle of the day, and it was $13 a ticket for matinee tickets, you know?
Yeah, and that's the main reason we went, is so I could experience this first-class, you know, movie going, and it was awesome.
Yeah, before we get into the movie, how was the overall presentation of it?
I thought it was fantastic. A word to the wise, don't punch your full-size drink off of your stool when the waiter first brings it to you.
Yeah, okay, that's...
Otherwise, you'll have a grumpy waiter the rest of the movie.
Yeah, okay, I did do
Zach
that.
Had an accident where he had to run to the bathroom and practically punched his soda.
Okay, well, the
off
accident
of his stand
wasn't with
and it
the
exploded.
Bathroom. The accident was with the drink. Okay, I have.
Well, no, yeah, it wasn't the bladder. Yeah. It was the drink that you punched off the stool.
Yeah, and yeah. Okay, well, don't do
no,
that.
No,
but order some food there. Okay, and a lot of people I talk to complain about the price, and it's like, but if you go to dinner and then a movie, you're going to spend the same. So just go to Cinetopia and have dinner and your movie at the same time. Enjoy the dinner, because to me, the food is awesome there. Awesome.
Yeah, that's what I would argue to those people, is like, okay, it's quote-unquote more expensive or whatever, but, you know, you're going to go out and let's say you take them to like a Five Guys, which is kind of an upscale hamburger place a little bit, you know. It's better than going to McDonald's, I would say. Well, you're going to spend as much in food at Cinetopia as you would on Five Guys, and I think the food at Cinetopia is like 8 steps above what you would get from Five Guys. Now, granted, Five Guys does make mean hamburger, but still, I mean, it's top shelf. You know, they have some classy guys in there working in the back, and I'd like to, you know, give them some praise too, because the food was excellent.
Yeah, you got
and,
a pulled pork sandwich, right?
Yeah, I had pulled pork, and you had fish and chips, and I almost had to steal one of your fish.
I know, the
it
fish and chips.
Friggin' looked phenomenal.
Yeah, the fish and chips is what I order next, every time. And next time you come down and we go see a movie, dude, you'll have to get the fish and chips, because it's so, so worth it.
Yeah, so, anyways, moving on to the movie we actually saw in this, and like I said, the reason we went there in the first place was for the experience, not for the actual movie itself that we watched, but that was Olympus Has Fallen, with Gerard Butler in it.
Yeah, and it's directed by, I think it's Anthony Fuqua. He's the director of Training Day. But depending on who you talk to, it really... Denzel Washington was the director of Training Day, because you're not going to tell Denzel how to act, you know? He was the one who directed it. Anthony Fuqua was just kind of like the guy who set up the cameras, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And
if you go in expecting an action movie, then you won't be disappointed, right?
Yeah, it's just... I mean, it had the super, super cheesy one-liners, and it had the over-the-top bad guy who's really not a bad guy because he's doing it because he loves his country, blah. Because
he's a freedom fighter.
He's a freedom fighter and all this stuff, and oh my god. It was just, the guy, the bad guy's the bad guy in Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, the Asian guy.
Mm-hmm. And... nothing really except one scene from this movie sticks with me. And that's the scene where he's, like, interrogating the two guys. And then he, spoiler alert, stabs a dude in the bottom of the mouth into his brain with a knife. That's the only thing that I keep thinking about.
Sure. It's just a dumb action flick, more or less. And there's nothing wrong with those at all. You know, it's just, it's not on the level of a Looper or the Zero Dark 30s, you know, that really make you think. But sometimes you don't want to go to a movie to think. You want to go to a movie theater to be entertained.
Yeah.
And that's what this movie was. You know, like you said, it's full of one-liners. It's just about, a guy from Korea that, you know, is trying to make stuff happen. So he takes over the White House and you know, Morgan Freeman plays acting president, you know, so I do love some Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, he just had such a non-important part in this movie.
Important role, not important at all.
You could tell he probably filmed all his scenes in like a day and a half, you know?
Oh, yeah, easy.
But,
so,
I mean...
you know, if you were into that kind of movie, or if you were, you know, you love Gerard Butler or something like that, you could see it, but honestly... we would probably say save your money.
Yeah, save your money. I mean, this is like the perfect movie if it's on like TNT in 2 years, you know?
Which it will be.
But see, then TNT's just going to edit it out, you know, but whatever, you know?
Yeah, all the good stuff. All the good stuff.
But it's just, it's an all right movie, you know? It's just, you know.
Yeah, no, the experience of Cinetopia made the movie greater than probably what it would have been if I would have seen it at the Garland Theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a buck.
I think that's a good way to sum it up.
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and move on. I mean, there's not a whole lot to talk about with that movie, but a good movie that we did see that, you know, is worth talking about is Life of Pi.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You know, it's that super... popular book that's out there. It's about a kid from India whose family owns a zoo, and they're moving the zoo to, I think it's Canada.
Yeah.
And while they're on the ship goes down, and he gets lost at sea, and he's stuck on a life raft or a lifeboat with a tiger, and it's kind of his adventure. And it's a really deep movie. I mean, if you just watch it and you don't even think about it, you just see like 1%, the top 1% layer, and it goes super, super deep compared to just the visual aspect of a movie.
Oh, yeah. And to me, now that I've seen this movie, I don't know. Like, I've been saying Looper is my favorite movie of the year, but now maybe Life of Pi has overtaken that. It's without a doubt the most creative movie I saw of 2012. The way it's shot, everything about it is just... it really makes you appreciate great filmmaking, and Ang Lee, who's the director of this, did a phenomenal job. He worked with the three things you never want to work with in a movie, and that's water, children, and animals. And granted, the animal was CGI, but still having to compensate for everything that's in it. And like you were just saying, it's really, really deep, and will really, if you're not really paying attention or don't have a deeper understanding of kind of what's going on, then you're not going to get it. And that's fine. I mean, it's not a movie for everybody. I mean, even if you don't understand it. So if you're just watching it and you're just watching it for an entertainment point, I'm sure you can watch it and be entertained because there's definitely some beautiful things on the screen. But if you can watch it, really delve into what's really going on, and all the metaphors and similes and the symbolism in the actions that are taking place, it's an amazing movie. And it's a movie that, I mean, I watched it with you, and what's funny is I was playing games, and then I'm watching it out of the corner of my eye, and it made me stop playing video games and sit down and watch this movie, because it's that great. Like, what did you think of it?
Well, off the bat, I think it's a movie that you probably need to watch more than once. Oh. I mean, I think it's worthy of a buy. It's that good of a movie, if you ask me. You know, on the surface, you just see it and you watch it, and we'll take like that island, for example, that he makes it to. You know, when you're watching it, you're just kind of like, well, this is really kind of random and strange. But I mean, it flows in the movie. It's not so random that you're like, what the heck? But at the same time, it is random enough to where you're like, what's kind of going on here? And you looked it up, you know, and it's supposed to be that this island is a huge metaphor for religion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's stuff like that in the whole movie that really makes you ponder things. I mean, at the end of the movie, the gentleman that Pi is telling the story to, you know, he asks him, you know, is like this story real, or
he's like, yeah,
was it something else?
Yeah, he's like, it's a little, you know, unbelievable. And he's like, yeah, he's like, so what's the better? Because without trying to give anything away, like, I guess we could just drop the spoiler alert. If you haven't seen it, go ahead and skip forward just a few minutes. And the basic premise of the movie is, you've been fair warned now, spoiler alert one last time, is that what really happened is that a few people survived the plane, or the shipwreck with Pi, and one of the members killed off the rest of them, and then Pi killed him, and there was no tiger, but the story is so terrible and such a bad representation of humanity that going with the tiger story, which Pi fabricates as a representation of himself and his animalistic nature, is a much greater story than what really happened. And that's why the two people who are told this story, which is the company itself
the Japanese shipping company,
they go with the tiger story because A, it's a way better story and it's not so nasty and evil, and then B, the writer goes with it because it's such a heart-wrenching story when you find out what actually happens to his mother and the sailor and even the cook, you know. And every metaphor in this movie, you're absolutely right, it's a movie you could watch 6 times probably and not pick up on every little detail. Because just going through the IMDb trivia, there's hundreds of things where it's like, the island is an actual representation of a Hindu goddess, like physically it looks exactly like her. And the scene in the beginning when there's like the church and they're looking down the valley, in the grass there's like a Hindu god that's been drawn into the grass with CGI, and it's like tons of millions of little things like that. And it has so many great lines in it, too, that make you question things like, yes, science is great at solving every mystery out there, but religion is great at solving things inside of us. And it's like, that's a really great line.
I don't know if no matter how many times you watch it, you'll get an answer out of it. You know, was it that people, you know, survived, or was it really that animals survived? Yeah, you know,
because
I mean,
even Pi,
it's never fully defined.
Yeah, even Pi just says, like, when he's out on the ship, he begins to lose sense of reality and his dreams become more real than what really happened, you know. And so
so if you don't enjoy movies that leave very open-ended questions at the end, then I don't think you'll enjoy the ending of this movie. I still say give it a shot, because the movie is very, very well done. You know, it's exceptionally well done, especially if you can appreciate CGI.
The CGI in this, there was many times where I was like, that's not CGI, that's like a real tiger, you know. And like, just reading it, it's like 80% of the tiger that you see on the film is CGI tiger, and then there's only a few scenes where they used a real one. One of the scenes is when the tiger's swimming and some other things like that. But it's just really, really, really well done. I highly, highly recommend this movie to anybody. Every person I've talked to since I've seen it, I ask, have you seen Life of Pi yet? Because, like, it's a movie that it's what I love about cinema and film, is that it can make you question things. It can make you question, like, think about the movie and answer questions yourself. And, like, it's an incredible tale of somebody who, it's obviously not a real story. I think reading a little bit about the book is that the author of the book took like four or five famous survivors of shipwrecks and kind of combine their story into one with adding his own flavor into it. And it's really, really great.
It's phenomenal. And I think the best part about movies like this is that it invokes different feelings and ideas for everyone. So that's why it's important for multiple people to go see it, because not everybody thinks the same way, views things the same way. And this is one of those movies where it brings out the best in the differences in people, you know? So
without a doubt. I heard a lot of people cried at the end of the movie, but you know, we didn't. Nope.
No. It's like sort of sad, but at the same time, it's not, you know, because they bring in Pai's family. They show that, hey, you know, he battled through this. He survived.
And he's going to move on and look forward, you know?
Yeah, he's better for it almost, you know? Yeah, and
like,
so
to me, like the animal or the end scene when the tiger is standing on the beach and looking forward, it's a direct representation of that part of Pai's life and the animalistic nature he had to rely on to survive in such a harsh environment, and that part of him died when he made it to the beach in Mexico, and it's looking forward, representing that he's never going to have to use that part of himself again, and it walks off into the jungle, and that's the end of it, you know, like he'll never have to be a tiger, quote unquote, again, you know, like because
again, yeah.
It, unless he, which would be the luckiest SOB in the unluckiest SOB in the world, get stuck on two shipwrecks, but you know.
Yeah. So once again, that's the Zach and Austin recommendation. That's two in this one podcast that we highly recommend.
No, that's
that
three,
you guys
man.
See.
Zero Dark 30, Looper, and Life of Pi.
Well, I guess it is three after all. Yep. We're gonna go ahead and move on. We also, you know, once again, it was me that hadn't seen them all, but I got to finish the Batman trilogy. And since this is all wrapped up, you know, the whole Batman with Christian Bale is done now, and we just wanted to share a few thoughts, you know. As a franchise, you know, Batman is huge, and everybody loves it, and I have to say, I think this really helped bolster Batman's stock, because I think this trilogy was exceptionally well done.
I think it's the best, yeah, it's the best superhero movies ever made, without a doubt. I really enjoyed Batman Begins. It really sets the stage. And I, you know what's funny is I really love Christian Bale as an actor, and I really like him as Bruce Wayne. Batman, meh. He's all right. I don't like his Batman voice at all. And it has
Batman voice is pretty terrible.
Like, it has so many things that go against it. Like, it's funny because, like, in the first one, they have Katie Holmes as, like, the main girl interest. And then the second one, they have Maggie Gyllenhaal. And then the third one, well, in the second one, there's something that happens. But the third one is completely different. But the cast of characters in it are so strong. I mean, Michael Caine as Alfred. I mean, the end scene in the last Dark Knight Rises is so, like, you really can connect with Alfred as a character. And to me, the greatest thing about these Batman movies is it's like a little bit of like what Batman would be in real life, because they really do explain away the superpowers that the supervillains have, you know, like Bane is just a really tough SOB and Joker was just a really kind of a crazy person. And you know what? I'm glad, because like these movies are over and they are a perfect representation of what it should have been. Now, of course, Warner Brothers, whoever makes these movies, are going to want to make more and make more money. So we can expect more movies, but I'm fairly certain that Christopher Nolan will have nothing to do with them. You know, he may produce them or something, but he won't direct another Batman movie, I don't think.
No, yeah, and I think he's publicly said, you know, that he's pretty much done with this too. He's walking away. And, you know, it's kind of the whole walking away when you're at the top sort of a thing. I mean, he did three really well-done movies, which is ridiculously hard to do, especially pertaining to a franchise as huge as the Batman franchise, you know? I mean, look at all the terrible Batman movies that have been made, or all the terrible other superhero movies that have been made. I mean, everybody loves Iron Man, and that's fine. Iron Man is a really fun movie to watch, but when you really sit down and look at it, the difference between Batman movies and the Iron Man movies is a night and day difference.
Oh, yeah, because those Iron Man movies are really, really cheesy. you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And,
exactly.
Like, these ones are really gritty. Like, you can really kind of... There's something there that's almost, like, captivating. Like, it really draws you in into the world. And it's something that, like, all Christopher Nolan movies have done for me. I mean, I'm a huge fan of his. Inception is amazing. I mean, all you have to do is look at, I think it's called The Prestige, right? Isn't that that magician movie with him? Mm-hmm. That's an awesome movie. I mean, his first one, Memento, is really great. It just, it's something about the way he shoots films, and it gets the performances out of actors that draw you in, and you really feel like it's, you're right there. And a lot of people have a problem with that last Batman movie, but it's kind of like a thing where it's like, it's was scrutinized because of unfair expectations, because of how great The Dark Knight is. And to me, I think that Dark Knight was obviously the best of the three movies, but number three is still really, really, really good. Like, it's a perfect end piece to the whole franchise, as it were, in this whole Dark Knight trilogy, you know?
Yeah, and I'd almost say it was unfair for the last movie in the trilogy, because the performance by Heath Ledger as Joker in the second one was probably the best acting performance for any character I've ever seen in my life, and probably will ever see.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, it's, I mean, you...
I mean...
Yeah, it's great. It's, I mean, there's a reason.
You almost can't top that. I mean, there probably are a few other, you know, roles that actors have played that, you know, are equal to, and, you know, it's like, if you had to equate it on a scale of 10 out of 10, you know, he's the maximum, and there are other, you know, roles that actors have that are the maximum, you know, but you can't exceed that. And
yeah, well, what's so...
It's almost impossible to make a movie afterwards when you have a perfect
actor. What's so great about it, too, is it's something so near and dear to... I mean, we both are 90s kids, and we grew up with the 90s animated Batman television show, which is, like, still... so great, and there's so many different ways you can play Joker. You can do like the Mark Hamill voice acting way, which is like kind of like a psychotic clown, and or you can do it the Heath Ledger way, which is like a psychopath, you know, like, and it's like they're both so equal but good. And you play that Arkham Asylum video game and you get the Mark Hamill version, or you watch the movie here, you get the Heath Ledger version, and they're two sides to the same character, and it's the scope in it, and it's everything that you would ever want to do, because I would say that we're pretty big nerds, you know, kind of quote unquote, and to have something so near and dear be played so perfectly, I think that's why, to me and you, it's such a great performance, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And also, I mean, on a more serious note, you have to give him respect too, because, you know, was him playing Joker maybe a catalyst to why he ended up dying?
I don't know about that. I think he was just a drug addict who had serious problems and was able to, you know, he's like any really great artist. Well, some, not everyone, but a lot of them have serious, serious problems. And, you know, he's self-medicated as opposed to getting some help otherwise. And, you know, like, it was a really tough performance, and I'm sure it took a lot out of him. But I know he had drug and alcohol problems before and after, you know. It just, I mean, it's a shame that he died. But if you're going to die, whatever you do last after you die in any kind of performance art is going to be, like, held up to the highest standard, because it's your pinnacle. And it happened to him, and it happened to... There's artists who it's happened to, and there's actors who it's happened to, and it's...
Yeah, for sure. So, that's kind of our feelings on the Batman trilogy, you know. It's definitely
one of the
better movie trilogies out there.
Before we move on, one last thing. Do you, like, obviously they're going to make more of these Batman movies, right?
Yeah,
I mean, because Warner Brothers is going to want to make more money. Do you think that they go with kind of a spoiler alert at the end of it? Is it's kind of led to believe that Joseph Gordon-Levitt will be playing Robin in the next, like, kind of...
I'd assume so. I'd hope so. I mean, you can't get a whole lot better than that. I mean, they set the framework or the groundwork or whatever saying you want to use for him to become Robin, and he's a spectacular actor, you know, so... Yeah. Why wouldn't you? I think it'd be dumb on their part not to, but, you know...
Maybe he doesn't want to or something, but...
Yeah, he doesn't want to, or the price is too high, you know? That's what it all comes down to, is dollar bills.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, to be honest, if they do make a Robin movie and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is Robin, I will be, like, first in line to see it, you know? But
yeah, for
we'll
sure.
We'll see how it goes.
It's definitely good. real quick, I just want to touch on a movie that's on Netflix. If you've listened to our previous movie podcast, you know I've been banging this movie's drum, and it's called Fastest. It's about motorcycle racing. It's, you know, it's just really well done movie. Voiced by Ewan McGregor, and it's just really done. But anyways, if you enjoyed that movie, there's a movie on Netflix called Faster. So Fastest is the one that I've been recommending. This one is Faster, and this is the precursor to Fastest. I didn't even know it existed, but it shows like the main guy sort of that they follow, Valentino Rossi, when he's even younger, and it shows some of the guys they talk about Valentino kicking butt on in Fastest, actually him having to race them and his reactions to them and stuff in Faster. So it's definitely worth a watch. It's not, the quality isn't as good, you know, the cameras weren't as well, you know, placed, and just the quality is down compared to Fastest, but it's definitely worth a watch. So yeah, if you want, just wanted to touch on that.
If you want more of the same, then you're be willing to put up with a slightly less quality to enjoy a good.
Yeah, there's plenty of motorcycle racing, and you know, if you like Valentino Rossi or Max Biaggi or you know anybody like that, you'll enjoy it. But so those were kind of our movies that we watched. You know, we've touched on them. We're gonna go ahead and kind of move to some TV shows now. And once again, another one that I haven't been able to see, but I got to catch up on while I was down in Portland, was the Vikings TV show.
Yeah, and, it's on History Channel.
You know, I was pretty impressed by it.
Yeah, I have some episodes saved up on my DVR that I've been neglecting to watch because I've been so busy, and I'll definitely get to them. But, I mean, it's well done, without a doubt, and the actors in it are well. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Jarl guy, but I think that's kind of what you're supposed to be, you know? Like, he's the guy you're supposed to hate, so, you know.
Sure. Yeah, no, I like the main guy they have in it, and I really like his wife. I think she's pretty good looking, so.
Yeah.
I'm totally down with that, and it's, I mean, it's, I don't think it's going to be super wildly successful, like a Game of Thrones or something like that,
yeah, it's like,
but
it's kind of like a watered-down version of Game of Thrones, you know? And like,
yeah, I
I'm
just think
it
might actually have a few more viewers because it's easier access than mm-hmm. Game of Thrones, which is only on HBO, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas History Channel, a lot of people have.
Yeah, and plus the thing I was impressed with on the TV show so far has been, like, how much they actually show. You know, like, I'm not, like, a mindless, violent guy. Like, I just don't like to watch violence for violence. But, you know, like, if you're gonna make a TV show about Vikings, then you're gonna have to show some, like, guys getting stabbed and killed and murdered and things like that, and they show beheadings and they show guys getting run through with swords, you know. And so, like, it's good to see that they're not being watered down and censored, and they're making like a Disney Channel version of a Vikings TV show, you know.
Yeah, totally. And if you like Game of Thrones, I would highly recommend you watch this movie. And if you've seen Game of Thrones and you thought maybe Game of Thrones was a little bit over the top. I mean, because there are some times when there's a bunch of nudity and stuff like that, and maybe that's not your thing. You can watch Vikings, and none of that is there. I mean, there's kind of a few innuendos and...
I mean, there's some sex scenes, but again, they're not going to show.
Sex scenes, but there's not chicks, like, finger-banging themselves, you know, right on screen.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bit of a difference. You can have your kids sit there and watch a show, and you know, they're hearing some sex noises or whatever, they're watching the corner of the bed shake. That's, you know, a little more acceptable nowadays versus like full on porn on HBO, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean it's still a young show, so it's tough to say how good it is, you know.
Sure.
I mean, we'll have to see after the first season cliffhanger to see, like, well, are they gonna hook you in, or are they kind of just gonna let it play out? But I mean, I'm definitely going to watch it through till I either get bored of it or it does something like Walking Dead did, which was take a whole season off. And we're going to kind of talk about Walking Dead because they just had their season finale. I think it was 2 Sundays ago now from when we were recording this.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
A week ago.
I guess this
yesterday.
Is why we're talking about it, is because we don't watch it anymore.
Yeah. And you especially were a huge Walking Dead fan season one, right? That's fair.
Oh, yeah,
to say.
I loved it.
And me
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you had it recorded at your house, and I was there, and I literally stayed up and watched every episode from like 10 o'clock at night till 4 o'clock in the morning.
And we had to go snowboarding. Yeah, we had to go snowboarding the next day, and you were dead tired.
Yeah, but it hooked me in, dude. Yeah. There was nothing I could do about it. It was awesome.
Yeah, and I then ended up getting back into it and watching it. And season one is some of the best like horror sci-fi ish type TV show that you could ever want. You know, like it's really well written. It has characters you love, characters you hate, characters you love to hate. And expands a whole spectrum. Like it's has a lot of dynamics in there. And then season two started, and we're both so excited. And we were both living together, and we recorded it and watched it. And to be honest, season two was some of the worst.
No, not some of the worst. It was the worst, dude. I mean, I hate it when people sugarcoat it and say, "Oh no, you know, it wasn't that bad. Fine." And you know, you and I are both super pro like character development, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and story progression and all that. And I understand they were kind of trying to build some bonds with some characters for the viewers, but
it was
for them
poorly done.
Yeah, well, they literally took the whole season off. I mean, yeah. I hate it when people sugarcoat it and say they didn't say the season was good. No, the season was absolute garbage, I thought.
Just, I mean,
garbage.
In
and it's
18 or 19 episode season, there's like not much that's memorable. You know, like they left
at
the season two cliff or the mid season cliffhanger, which is when you find spoiler alert. You find out that girl that they've been searching for the whole first half of the season is a zombie, and then they kill her, and it's like really like, oh my god, I can't believe that happened. But then you reflect on it, it's like, wait, so we just wasted a whole half a season looking for a character that was already dead?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And you kind of already figured that she was probably in that barn too,
yeah.
You know?
And it's just ridiculous, you know, like. And
yeah,
then
I mean, I'll give them the last like episode or two of the season was fine. Like those were pretty much what I wanted. Now, granted, I'm not a big huge like shoot everything, assault rifle, shotguns, blow everybody up.
Yeah,
but
see,
there was
now,
at least some action.
That. We didn't hate season two, not just because nothing happened, and that's to make it sound like we just wanted like zombie killing every episode. That's not what it's about. It was just poorly written. Like, there was nothing that happened, like, not only in an action sense, there was nothing that happened in character development or plot.
Story progression.
You know, they
were on a farm.
They
were stuck on a farm
for a whole season, and then the big reveal is, oh man, up in the barn, they got zombies. It's like, well, the whole world is covered in zombies.
Yeah, exactly. That was my biggest thing. At least in season one, they were sort of on the move. You know, like Rick was with that black guy at his house, and then, you know, he finds his wife, and then they're on the move again.
And that's all in episode one that happens. And it's such great because it really puts him in a dilemma. Because, right, he's going to kill his wife. He's got her in the sights, and then he doesn't, you know, and then he does. Oh my God. You know, it's like that's really great character development because it, right off the bat, episode one, they hook you in with an amazing, like, tough choice that would you have the guts to make this, you know? And now like season three is over and people are like, it's so good. And it's like, well, you know what? They took a whole season off. So guess what? I'm going to take a whole season off and you're not going to retain me as a viewer if you just mail it in as a TV show, you know? Like that's the great thing about Breaking Bad. That is without a doubt the best TV show on TV. Like they didn't take any seasons off. Of course, it's a really long formed TV show. So of course there's not going to be some awesome episodes, but where we've gone from this episode one of the characters to where they are now is like, I cannot believe the transformations of some of these characters. And I'm so happy that they're not drawing it out and it's going to end. And it's going to be amazing. And even if it sucks, then what? Oh, whatever. But, like, that's on the same channel as a TV show, which is super character-driven, but yet they don't do anything. Nothing happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a zombie show has to be character-driven. I mean, there's, like, you're following the same, like, six characters, you know? And not only are you following them, you're killing them off, like, continuously. And I know they added a few new characters I saw the other day, like three characters got signed on to continue, mm-hmm. You know, making shows and stuff, which is all great. And, You know, I didn't really care much for any of the characters either. I think that might have been another one of my problems. I can't stand that blonde chick. I couldn't stand Rick's wife. I didn't like Shane all that much.
Yeah.
Rick, I don't really like him. I mean, he's okay. He's the best of them all.
No,
Carl, I absolutely hate.
Yeah, I would say that I really like... I think Glenn is an interesting character because he's like that super neurotic kind of guy. And then Daryl is just really interesting. But everybody's like in love with Daryl because he's like, hey, look, Daryl, the redneck is so badass now. And it's just like... dumb people really like Daryl, you know, so I can't
and you know, and that's cool. Like, Daryl is a cool character and stuff, but at the same time, it's, like, hard for me to support, especially because I have black family members, a dude that, like, is rolling around on his motorcycle with the Nazi SS symbol on it, you know? I mean, I know it's just a show, and I'm totally fine with the dude as a person and stuff like that,
well, he's
but
the
for
same
his
guy
character
in
the show...
Yeah, he's the same actor that's in Boondock Saints.
Yeah, and I'm totally fine with him. It's just the character he plays within the confines of The Walking Dead. I find it hard to totally support him.
Yeah, him and his brother Merrill are, like, super racists. And
yeah, exactly.
Now,
and so, you know, I didn't feel a super strong bond with him.
Yeah, we haven't seen season 3, so maybe he's lightened up or whatever, but, you know.
Sure, and I think he has, too, you know. But you know, it's just, during season 2, because we can't base anything off of season 3 because we haven't seen it,
you
know? You
know what? If it comes on Netflix, I actually don't know if I'm going to watch it. I'm kind of done with this whole... Like, zombies is really fun. Like, all the zombie video games and everything are fun to play and everything. But I'm kind of done with, like, a zombie TV show. Like, it just doesn't apply. You know, especially because they had Hines Ward be a zombie in one of the
that's another thing that I can't stand for either. I it's not only the fact that he played for the Steelers and stuff. I just can't stand for Hines Ward as a person. I think he's a terrible human being. You know, I do. When you break a rookie's jaw in camp just because, dude, you're a dick in my book, a huge dick.
Well, that and you know, it is the worst part of the Batman trilogy is that god awful football sequence in the middle of it. Like, I mean, I understand they set the stage, and from the time that Hines Ward returns that kick for a touchdown and they show Big Ben's fat head on the sidelines, I hate that whole scene. But then as soon as Bane comes back in, I like it, you know? It's like,
yeah.
But that whole, that's the whole worst part about that movie. But yeah, Hines Ward was a zombie, and if Walking Dead comes on Netflix, are you going to watch it? Are you going to watch season 3?
Probably not. I don't have the time to devote to watching it anymore. I mean, I'm going to have my PC built soon. You know, we're doing these podcasts. I'm going to try to start doing a few YouTube videos of our gameplays and stuff like that. I'm going to be working my tail off, you know. I'm going to have a lot of stuff going on. So, you know, Walking Dead doesn't take a precedent for me.
No. And because they lost us as viewers, you know.
Yeah.
Plus, I heard, I don't know if this is true, but I heard from somebody that they fired a bunch of writers right before the end of season 3 because they weren't happy with how the end of the season went. You know, like, the powers that be weren't happy with how the end of season 3 happened from a writing development. So, it's like, so, I mean, the whole reason, like, they fired a bunch of writers after season 1 who made season 1 awesome. And then they tried to bring him back for season 3 to make season 3 awesome again. And then they fire him again. It's like, what's going on here? You know, like.
Yeah, it's just a cluster if you ask me. And those are our thoughts pretty much on Walking Dead. So, you know, if you're wondering why we haven't talked about it, because I figured some people might be wondering because Walking Dead is probably one of the most popular shows on TV currently at the moment. I mean, you get asked about it at work all the time, like, oh, did you see this? Did you watch this? You know, and I just wanted, you know, to kind of put our opinions out there so that way people understand why we don't watch Walking Dead any longer.
Yeah, exactly. And kind of wrapping it up with one last thing this today is the new coaches for the Ultimate Fighter are announced for next season, because we're almost to the end of the John Jones, Bones, and Chael Sonnen season, which to me has been actually really good. It's got some underdog guys that are keep winning no matter who they throw at them, and it's got some favorite guys, and it's had some awesome knockouts. But the next season is going to be – it's going to have that – God, what is her name?
Ronda Rousey.
The next season's gonna have Ronda Rousey as a coach, And then the other coach is going to be the winner of these upcoming 135 women's fight that's going to happen here. And, you know, while I am pro women in MMA, like, I have nothing against it. It's not for me. Like, I don't enjoy watching it. Like, it's not that I don't enjoy watching women compete in athletics. It's not that. It's just, like, it's not entertaining to me to watch them, like, fight. I don't know. Like,
right. Yeah. I'd have to agree with you, dude.
It's not going to be a whole women's season of Ultimate Fighter. They're going to have half women, half men. And I think it's for both the 135 division for women and men, or whatever the women's division is. And I'm fine with that. It's just like, how are they going to do that logistically? Like, they're going to have women and men living in the same house. And trust me, the kind of guys that do MMA like that and get on that TV show are not the most gentlemanly. And I think that's inviting a lot of problems potentially for
I think that's kind of why they're doing it, though, too, is they're trying to cause a little more drama than might happen, you know, with just guys on the TV show, you know? Like, with guys, it's just, you know, my testosterone's raging, let me fight you real quick. And now it's like, you got the girls there, yeah, so they're thinking them with their other heads. Yeah. And
one of my favorite YouTube videos is one that's not very popular, but it's from The Ultimate Fighter, and it's everything that I hate about dudes, and it's this overly drunk MMA dude at the house who wants to pick a fight, and he's sitting there and he's yelling and screaming at the guy telling him to fight, and the other guy's laying in bed like, dude, you were really drunk, get out of here. And the guy just like breaks down crying. He's like, oh, I bang, bro, I bang. And I sent you that YouTube link, and it's just like, yeah, that's embarrassing. And then like the next scene is like a guy saying like, I'm embarrassed for him, because like, that's a really poor representation of what our sport should be. And you know, like, they're right, you know, like, they have an image problem sometimes with some of the people that are drawn to MMA naturally, you know, just because they think like, oh, I'll just be a tough guy and fight, as opposed to drawing like really smart athletes who could promote your sport. You're kind of bringing like a Nick Diaz in, who is not a good person and obviously doesn't pay taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's a big problem for MMA moving forward, you know? And I just don't know how much having two women coaches, and it, to me, it feels like a gimmick, you know?
Well, yeah, that's my biggest issue with it is, like you said, UFC doesn't attract the most gentlemanly type men out there.
We watch it, and we're really smart and gentlemanly and nice dudes, and I think we watch it for different reasons as opposed to like a guy who just wants to see.
Well, and not only watching it, but I'm talking about the men that they're bringing into the household, and I think they're going to have a problem with taking orders from a woman MMA fighter. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just like, they'll put their face on and be like, oh yeah, they'll work and practice and do this and that, but I think deep down they're going to be like, why am I learning from this chick, you know? Tell me, do you honestly believe like the next crop of MMA fighters that are coming up think they're going to get better education from this Ronda Rousey chick than if they were in this current season learning from John Bones Jones? You really honestly think those guys are going to feel like, oh yeah, Ronda Rousey is going to teach me as much as Bones is, you know? I don't think that at all.
The best thing about having, like, John Jones Bones is you, like, he'll show you some things, but it's not him that you're really getting taught from. It's his camp that he brings in and all the dude. Like, if you've been watching the season, Frank Mir is John Jones Bones' wrestling coach. And that is awesome because Frank Mir is an awesome, awesome wrestler. So, like, who is going to be in Ronda Rousey's camp? Is it just going to be all the guys who show her how to do arm bars because that's how she wins? And that doesn't work in the guys. Like, arm bars are still, like, an acceptable way to get somebody, but you don't see nearly as many arm bar victories.
It's hard. Guys are stronger nowadays, you know? They have more muscle, and they're too smart. The techniques you learn are to stop you
from getting arm barred and triangled, which is, you know, like 3 or 4 years ago, one of the biggest ways you were knocked out in MMA was you got caught with an armbar and you got caught by a triangle. It's really, really rare to see like a elite fighter in MMA get caught in a triangle choke anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's because a lot nowadays in MMA, it's a lot of really, really high quality wrestlers versus back in the day. If you were a really high quality wrestler and you're going up against a guy that was, you know, a really good boxer, but his ground game was, you know, not so good. That was pretty much an automatic win for you, dude. You just had to take him down where he couldn't use his boxing skills, and boom, armbar, triangle, whatever you want to do to him, and he's toast. It's done, you know? And now it's quite the opposite. Everyone in MMA almost a phenomenal wrestler. Because
what they do now is, like, the top-end collegiate wrestlers, they go, hey, why don't you learn how to throw a few punches? That's all you have to learn, and a few kicks. And then you roll over it into MMA, and that allows you to... I mean, sometimes they're really boring fights, you know, like the guys who just grind it out for a victory. But also, you get a guy like John Jones Bones, or a guy like that guy from Spokane. What's his name? Michael Pineda?
And Chiesa.
Michael Chiesa. Michael Chiesa, who's like an elite wrestler for his level and his skill class, who is just kind of learning how to throw a few combinations, and he'll take you down, he'll take you back, and he'll choke you out. You know, like...
Sure, you can kind of just look at GSP, man. That's kind of what he does. His fights are kind of boring and drug out and stuff, but, you know, he's just going to grind with you, and he's going to win. Yeah, I mean, and that's all he does is win. It makes him
really, really, really entertaining, you know, like... and you're right, some of the GSP fights are a little boring, but he's going to put a hurting on you because he is such an elite wrestler that whatever you want to do, no, that's not going to happen. GSP is going to control the fight, you know? Yeah, and plus, exactly. GSP's come back from a gruesome knee injury, too. So, I mean, good for him.
Yeah, totally. But those are kind of our thoughts on the upcoming season of The Ultimate Fighter, since this one's sort of nearing an end. And that's all we have today for the show, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope we gave you guys plenty of stuff to go out and watch and enjoy as much as we did.
Yeah, before we wrap it up.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, too. Yeah, exactly. So.
We'd love to hear your thoughts. And before we wrap it up, if you just had to give a quick rundown on the order of what you suggest, like, the movie that they have to see first. And then second, give like a top maybe three.
I think, here's my top three. I think you need to see The Life of Pi, number one, Zero Dark Thirty, a close second, and obviously Looper third.
Yeah.
Those are definitely it. I'd highly recommend Life of Pi if you could only pick one, though.
Yeah. I would say that if you want to just be entertained for entertainment's sake, then watch Looper because it's really smart and it'll drag you along. But if you really want to challenge yourself in a cinematic standpoint, watch Life of Pi and see if you can pick up on some of the littler things and the symbolism in the movie, because it'll really challenge it. And then obviously, if you want to watch a really intense movie that's really... I mean, it's almost kind of like on a level where it's like Schindler's List or something, where it's like, you got to watch it, but only watch it once, then watch Zero Dark Thirty. You know, I mean...
Yeah, for sure. And if you do watch those and enjoy them or don't enjoy them, go ahead and email us at a2zpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys. We'd appreciate it. Once again, thanks for listening to our show. We really appreciate you guys who... you know, enjoy listening to us talk, and even if you don't enjoy listening to us, then, you know, we're glad you listened anyways. But anyways, I'm A.
And I'm Z.
And we'll see you guys later.
Yeah, have a good one. Yeah.